This week, are concerned with the influence of crime television, pictures, and movies on the younger generation. One little boy asked, said to his mother, "How old is God?" And the mother said, "Well, God has always existed. He's eternal. Well, how does that happen to be?" She said, "That's a mystery." He said, "You don't mean a mystery. You mean miracle. A mystery is a murder." And a little four-year-old boy in Detroit, announcing our program on Tuesday night, shouted, "Come on, Beat Up Sheen is on the air." As a matter of fact, the younger generation is creating quite a stir. I read the other day in one of the New York papers that during the past year, the younger generation broke 265,343 school windows deliberately. That is about 72 or more windows a day. That makes three an hour, or one every 20 minutes, night and day. They're working pretty hard at vandalism. Now, think of what a pain that is to the Board of Education. It cost them $300,000. Not very long ago, Mr. Hoover announced that the crime in the United States costs the American family $495 apiece. I saw a cartoon not very long ago of some boys and girls in the classroom, and they were had just tied up the teacher. And she was really tied to the desk, and one of them had an axe and was about to beat her, and the teacher was saying, "All right now, children, recess is over." And when one hears about juvenile delinquents, one wonders just exactly what kind of education makes them. And so I just thought I might tonight try to invent some theory of education that might produce juvenile delinquents and criminals. I don't know whether it will or not, but I'm just going to make it out of my own mind and then show you how wrong it is. Now, this particular theory of education that is bound to produce juvenile delinquents is called regressive education. And regressive education has three principles. First is, man is an animal. The second principle of regressive education is a youth must always be self-expressive. And thirdly, there must never be any repression. I will explain each of these in turn. First, if you want to make criminals in the next generation, the best thing to do is to tell the children that they have no soul, they have no mind, they have no spirit, that they are like animals, that they have instincts, libidos, passions, emotions, drives, and urges. They perhaps are a little more complicated than an animal, but they are essentially beasts. The second principle of regressive education, which will produce criminals, is to hold that we must always be self-expressive of these libidos and drives. For example, if you wanted to become very technical, such an educator might say, you see down at the bottom of our mind is what is called an id. And over above it is a super ego. Now the id is passion, an instinct, which must always be given its release. The argument of this particular group of regressive educators would be, notice that an animal never has any complexes. Why not? Because it always follows its instincts. If man follows his instincts, he'll never have one either. So what he must do is express the id, which is the seat of the instinct. Now the superego is made up of morality, religion, totems, taboos, commandments, and so forth. All that must in some way be negated. And thirdly, there must never be any discipline. Never correct a child. Never tell a child that he's wrong. Because if you tell a child he's wrong, he may develop a guilt complex. Now, this theory is called regressive education because man regresses. He regresses to an animal. And it was invented by the very well-known professor. Let him be brat. A brat is a smart boy who doesn't smart where he ought to smart. A brat is a boy who's always on his best behavior. One of the interesting things about Professor Let 'em Be Brats is that he has no children. But he's written a number of books on how to raise children according to these particular principles. And he strongly advocates that a child should never be corrected. What is curious about him is that he has a dog. And you know he'll not allow that dog to jump up on the furniture. Not allow the dog to bring bones in the house. And he's even insisted that that dog be housebroken. Very peculiar for Professor Bratz to do that, but he did it. Now, what's wrong with the theory of Professor Let 'em Be Bratz? Well, first of all, let us take the idea that man is an animal. Now, is man an animal? If man is just an animal, why is it that man has complexes and an animal has none? Did you ever hear of a rhinoceros going to a psychoanalyst? Did you ever hear of a rooster with an inferiority complex? Did you ever hear of a pig going to a hogologist? There isn't an animal in the world has a psychosis or neurosis. Why does man have them? He has a complex because he's complex. Because he's made up of body and soul. Flesh and spirit. In addition to his passions and to his libidos and to his instincts and his urges. He has a soul which is capable of knowing the infinite and the eternal. And only the eternal can make a man despair. That is why a man has a complex. That's why he's different than an animal. He has a destiny beyond that of the beast. And Professor Let 'em Be Bratz says, but you must always allow every child to express his instincts as he pleases. An animal always does that. We have these particular instincts, why not use them? A hog uses its instincts according to a hog nature. But a man should use his instincts and his passions according to his nature. And his nature happens to be rational. Therefore, he will use them in a rational sort of way. Not as a hog does. Here's a pen. If I try to use this pen to open a beer bottle, get beer out with a snorkel at point, I wouldn't open the beer bottle and I would break the pen because the purpose of the pen is not to open beer bottles. Man has a purpose, which is to achieve perfect life and truth and love, and when he does not attain that purpose, he becomes very unhappy. Professor Let 'em Be Bratz also says that there isn't any such thing as wrong. You just teach children hygiene. If you tell them the dangers that there are and certain practices, well, then they will never resort to those practices. He gives the example of smallpox in the house. He said, if you saw a smallpox sign on a house, you wouldn't go into that house, would you? Well, we tell our children certain dangers here to health. Therefore, you will never indulge in those particular practices. Sounds very good, but Professor Let 'em Be Bratz is not so very logical because there's no man in the world has an impulse and a drive to break down the door of a smallpox room, but he has a passion and an urge to break down other kinds of doors. And those instincts have to be repressed or else used according to right reason. The laws of society and the laws of God. Then the second principle of regressive education has to do with self-expression. We are told that the child must always be allowed to follow his instincts and is to be praised when he does. I actually and really and truly saw a mother in a department store at Christmas time. The little boy was about 7 or 8. And he was elbowing and pushing everybody out of the way. And the mother was behind him saying, "That's right, you're learning." They say the self-expression is always right. Well, now let's see if it is. Suppose that a soldier is at duty in the front line. It is a critical moment of battle. And he has an urge to leave his post. He deserts it, bumps into the captain. And the captain said, "Young man, I want to congratulate you." He says, "Too long have soldiers been following these mid-Victorian taboos of being loyal to their country and staying at their post in the midst of danger. I recommend you for the Congressional Medal of Honor. You are self-expressive." Or suppose a robber breaks into a bank and he's caught outside of the door, and the policemen bring the robber into the banker. The banker says, "Well, what's wrong with it?" "Troll, I take an interest in other people's money, generally 6%. He takes 100% interest in other people's money. Let him be self-expressive. Let him keep the money. And many a man indeed also has an urge. I've heard of some men who did have urges to do something to their mothers-in-laws. Should they be self-expressive? If they are self-expressive, I can imagine such a person who does violence to a mother-in-law being brought before a self-expressive judge. And the judge says, "Is it true that you killed your mother-in-law?" "Yes, I killed my mother-in-law." "How did you kill her?" "I killed her with a club." "What kind of a club?" "A golf club." "I know, but which club?" "He said the Niblick." "Well," he said, "if you were going to kill her, that was the club to use." There is indeed such a thing as self-expression. But we must express ourselves according to our higher nature, not according to our lower nature. Suppose an airplane is coming into the landing field. Were endowed with consciousness and decided not to follow the beam. Why should I follow that dogmatist who decides that I must come into the runway this particular fashion? I'm going to determine how I shall come in. That airplane is apt to crash. And that's what happens to many self-expressive individuals. They're not following the moral beam. And they're not following that which is highest in their nature. And that brings us to the third principle of Professor Let 'Em Be Brats. And his third principle is never repress, never scold, never spank, never reprimand, never tell a child that he's wrong. Now, Professor always says that there's one instinct you must always give free expression to. You must give free expression to every instinct, but one in particular. Of course, that is always the erotic instinct. Now, we would like to ask the professor, why is it that such individuals always praise the release of that particular instinct and they never condemn the repression of the hunger instinct. Why isn't dieting wrong? Isn't that self-repression? I believe that women generally praise women for repressing that instinct. They say, "My, you look so much better since you took off that second chin." Or, "Now you're just getting back to normal." And then, as regards repression, these professors, like Professor Letton B. Bratz, believe that every form of repression is wrong. Now, what he forgets is this. It can be illustrated by many a woman, for example, in the United States, who says that my husband is the most devoted man in the world when he's sober. All right. Devotedness. To be devoted, what does he have to do? He has to repress alcoholism. Suppose he represses devotedness. Then he liberates alcoholism. It must not be forgotten that if we repress evil, good comes up. If we repress good, evil comes up. There are certain moments when self-expression is the very condition. Self-repression is the very condition of a good self-expression. Now, if these be principles, and they are principles apparently by which some are guided, otherwise we would not have the increase in crime in the United States. If these be the principles, it might be interesting to ask, finally, what effect will notions of patriotism, goodness, truth, love, fidelity, prudence, justice, temperance, and fortitude have upon souls and minds that have followed the principles of Professor Letton B. Bratz? Do you think they're going to follow the exhortations of those who want to build up a good citizenry? Here's something to remember. And every college student in the United States who's had a good course in philosophy knows this principle. If he's had a good course, he knows it. Quid quid recipiter, recipiter promotum recipientis. Whatever is received according to the manner of the one receiving it. Suppose I had some glasses here. Red, green, and black. And I poured water into the red glass, it would look red, wouldn't it? I poured it into the green glass, it would look green. If I poured it into the black glass, it would look black. Now suppose this water to be truth. And the sort of things that make for good citizens and good people. When you pour that truth into mind A, and you pour it into mind B, and it does not have the same effect. It's identically the same proof. A will accept it, B will not. The difference is not in the truth. The difference is in the way these particular people here have lived. This determines their reception to a truth. They say they're skeptics. Skepticism is not an intellectual position. Skepticism is a moral position. The sun, for example, shines on mud. And shines on wax. Shines on mud. And it hardens it. It shines on wax and it softens it. Let identical truths and exhortations be presented to two different individuals. What will determine the reception is the moral background and behavior of those individuals. If we do not live as we think, we soon begin to think as we live. Let this be a hill. Here is the sun. At the bottom of the hill is a little man. In the middle of the hill is another little man. And at the top of the hill is another little man. And I say to the man at the bottom of the hill, "Has the sun risen?" He says, "No, not yet." "Has the sun risen?"
I think it's just about to come up.
Has the sun risen? Yes, it's been up 3 hours. Their difference in outlook on the sun depended upon their altitude. And the difference of reception of the things that make for patriotism and goodness depends upon our moral attitude. In other words, whether we've left the libido and the passions go without any regard for reason and righteousness. Too long has education been concerned with making man the spectator of reality, as if the world and the social order was merely something that we watched indifferently. As we watched the drama, seated in the orchestra. We are to truly build up. Citizens in America, we must educate our youths to the realization of the great truths. They are not only spectators of reality, but they are also creators. And whence comes this power of creativity? It comes from the fact that every one of us is endowed with a spirit and with a soul, with choice and deliberation. Each and every one of us in time has been given the alternative of saying aye or nay to the great God who made us. We are creators of our destiny, and if anyone says, well, if God knew that I would be a wicked man, why did he make me? The answer is, God did not make you as a wicked man. You made yourself. This is a veil of soul making, this world of ours. God is the creator, and so are we, in a limited sense. May we be creators, self-expressive of that liberty and that grace which will make us great citizens of a great country under God.